You're listening to A Stranger Podcast, www.thestranger.com.
What do you know?
Never gonna know, never, never gonna know.
Thank you, dear listener, for downloading yet another Dear Science Podcast. I am Jonathan Gollop, the science columnist of The Stranger and actual real-life scientist. And joining me today is David Schmader, associate editor here at The Stranger and real-life gay person.
Yes, hello.
Hello, hello. And David sort of is the voice of God. So if you think God has joined in on this podcast about all things gay, it's just David. So please do not be frightened.
It might be God. It sounds like God. Treat it like the voice of God. Vote for Obama.
So we are going to talk about why there are gay men, which is actually more of a tricky question than would we expect. But I'm going to get over and start now by saying what we are not going to be talking about. We're not going to be talking about women, at least homosexual women, because, well, you know, science is still kind of working on women. We sort of just met them.
Women troubles for centuries, you scientists.
Really, I mean, we've come a long way in the last couple of decades, mostly by having more women as scientists. But we're not going to talk about them today, sadly. And I will probably get at least one angry email, so I apologize on behalf of scientists everywhere. There's been some nifty things, and maybe I'll be coerced into talking about them in a future date. The other thing that we're not going to be discussing in earnest at this point is whether or not homosexuality is an intrinsic trait, because no one in science actually argues this anymore. You can go back as early as 1981, and there was a pretty solid scientific consensus that being gay is an intrinsic trait. It is as much a part of you as anything else. And so a science podcast discussing that would be really, really, really dull. It would just mean be reading thousands of papers, one after another, just the titles of them, and no one would enjoy that. Not even the American Family Values Council of America.
It's an emotional argument for them, not a logical one.
So we're not gonna try to bring in logic. And if you want to read along, this is an integrated podcast. You can search for "Wait, Why Are There Gay Men?" On my blog, dearscience.org, or the slog, and you can read and see more or less what we're talking about. And right at the top, there's a link to like 12 papers that I just more or less randomly selected, all saying that being gay is an intrinsic trait. And so you don't even have to take my word for it.
Right. And the choice is whether you decide to kill yourself or put on heels and go and have a nice life.
And I really recommend the latter. It seems to,
yeah.
It brings joy to all of our lives.
To all the people who are still fighting that. But there's some choice involved. Well, yes, there's a choice in how you deal with this intrinsic fact, like there is with all intrinsic facts. But the end on the choice.
The end.
Argument.
We will now go on. So now with that all accepted, if you dig through all these papers, there's sort of an interesting little pattern that comes up. One is there are gay men everywhere. Everywhere, every culture. I don't care what the president of Iran has to say. Gay men are everywhere. They pop up in every family in inconvenient places like Oklahoma and Iowa and Tehran and it just is. And it's about in a pretty consistent level across cultures and times and everything else. So it's not like all the recruiting being done for the gay lifestyle really has done any good, nor has any of the beheadings and such things really done any good on the other side. So it just sort of happens. It's like, and sort of intriguingly, it's at a roughly a, sort of a similar pattern as lefties, where there's some familial pattern.
Oh, left-handed people.
Left-handed people, where the left-handed people exist in all cultures and most of human history at about the same level and is very stable, even in cultures that really don't like left-handed people and cultures that really don't care. The only time there's been sort of any bumping up, and this is, again, we're getting way off, and there's a former column you can read if you want to get on this, but apparently the only time where left-handed people have gone up is in really violent societies where people use swords to kill each other, because using a sword with the left hand when most people are using a right hand seems to be a little advantageous in the whole killing aspect. And so left-handed people become a little bit higher, but generally it's been pretty, pretty stable. And same thing with gay men. So it's an interesting thing. All right. So if you have a trait that's sort of like that, again, it argues to it being intrinsic, and it argues to maybe some genetics being mixed in there, but not tremendously. So beyond just outright genes, you can have sort of hormone exposure in the womb and this thing called epigenetics, which is how genes are turned on and off, determining. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But so there's more than one way to have it be an intrinsic trait. That big thing makes it pretty obvious, though. It is an intrinsic trait right off the bat. Second thing is the sisters, mothers, and aunts of gay men have more babies than those without a gay relation. And so it's sort of a weird thing, and they've noticed this. And so this is an important thing to keep in mind, because we're going to get to a sort of weird paradox about gay potentially being genetic. The third thing is a gay man's relatives are more likely to be gay, but only those relatives that are related through a mother or like through the female chain. So a mother, a brother, something, and some relation that's gone through a common female genetic line. And so it's kind of interesting. There's a reason to believe that there's a genetic component to being gay because of all these family trees that you can work through and find that, you know, if you're gay, your brother's more likely to be gay as long as you share a mother or through an aunt or something like that.
And the further you get down in the family line, like younger brothers are more likely to be gay.
Exactly.
As well.
And birth order sort of matters, right. Which argues more to like a hormonal sort of argument.
Yeah. And also brings up the, my brother was bringing this up and he's like, well, maybe it's just because you don't need to, it's a biological thing where you don't need to procreate so much anymore. When you have more sons, it's less important for them to be able to carry on the lineage.
Oh, we're getting somewhere good, right? So there's one other thing I'm going to do. There's a trick you can play at home, dear listener. Ready? So, David, real life gay person, put up your hand. Put your hand straight up.
Are you going to do that slap my face thing?
No.
Your hand's bigger than your face, you have cancer.
So now compare the length of your ring finger to your index finger.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so your ring finger and index finger are about the same length. Mine, my ring finger is much longer than my index finger.
That means God really does want you
to
get married.
Now
more
I will
than
ask
me.
One of the tech savvy youth, one of the heterosexual female tech savvy youth. We compare her finger length, and again, they're about equal. So this trait, it's this has been sort of gone back and forth in the scientific community. The correlation is very weak in heterosexuals, but in homosexual men in particular, are very likely to have a ratio that's about 1-to-1, about the same finger length. Gay women, lesbians, are more likely to have the straight man sort of pattern, which where the ring finger is much longer than the index finger.
Funky.
And then straight women obviously have the more 1-to-1 ratio. So there's a lot, and that almost entirely has to do with hormone exposure in the womb. So again, there's like these little weird little things, and that's great to play on conservative relations who argue about homosexuality, particularly the loud ones. You can go and put up your hand, let me do. And it's really great if it's like a guy and the ring finger ratio is 1-to-1. Now, it really doesn't mean very much, like I said, the correlation's weak in straight men, but
it's a good bar game.
It's a great bar game. Super great. It's a lot of fun. It tends only to get you into a fist fight for occasions.
You have man hands, lady.
All right, so let's say. So we're going to just accept for the sake of argument, if being a gay man is genetic, why are there gay men, right? Because it's a genetic trait that makes you less likely to have babies. And any genetic trait that makes you less likely to have babies would seem to die off, right? It would be like having, you know, horrible, horrible pain at seeing a naked human being, like horrible mental anguish. That gene would probably not last very long, maybe in certain cultures. But generally and broadly in human society, it probably not lasts very, very long. So there's a couple ways we can kind of get around this. One of the things is kind of what's sort of related to what you were saying with is something called kin selection, where, you know, maybe it's just so great having a gay uncle or a gay brother that you're so much better off that you, even though like your straight relations end up having more babies and the babies end up happier and healthier and more joyous, this is sort of like we're all better dressed and have more better show tunes by having gay men in our lives notion.
And people who aren't parents of their own, like having kind of these supplementary caretakers who aren't the primary caretaker, like what that purpose could have served along, you know, evolutionary lines.
And absolutely. So then it's worth, you know, having in your genes, and this has to be one of those traits where there's many genes that sort of flow into it. It's worth having gay people pop up at a low level, but a consistent level, because it's great for you to have a gay uncle.
But it does seem kind of more of an aesthetic choice than like a bio. Like God made an aesthetic choice of like, oh, we need some gay people around.
I mean, no, but there are evidence of kin selection that happen all the time, and it's sort of, you can come with a lot of biological things that have nothing to do with sexuality where it does. There's actual genetic trait where you can actually work through the math and the evolution. And so when we think of talking about evolution, that's the other thing we should say. Evolution's a population thing. A lot of times we hear, oh, like,
teach the controversy.
Yeah, I should. We're also going to take evolution as a given in this talk here. You can send me angry letters again if you disagree on that. And the population having the sort of gay alleles floating around, the gay copies of genes floating around, It's a good thing for kin selection. They've done a couple studies on this, actually testing it, right? So if you have a gay out gay relation, do you do better? Do you do better on test scores? Bad number. Really what we care about, though, at the end is more babies that survive to adulthood have babies of their own for this sort of from the evolutionary genetic point of view. And most of the studies have not really demonstrated a connection. This doesn't absolutely refute it, but it's been tested, and there's not been anything that really supports this idea. So we'll go on to number two. The second thing is something called overdominance. And overdominance is sort of the sickle cell anemia idea. So maybe if you have two gay alleles, right, each gene we have in us, most of the genes that we have, we get two copies of them. So you get two copies of the gay allele for this gene, and you're gay. But if you have one copy, maybe you're just, like, a little bit nicer straight man and, like, a better dad and, like, can be, like, be better parent. And so in that sense, even if, like, you get two copies, you don't end up having babies. You don't have many fewer babies on average on a population level. Just by having in the mixture a lot of people who have one gay and one straight allele at this gene, you end up making the population is better off overall. And so the comparison, and this is a much more extreme example, is like sickle cell anemia. So if you have two regular gene hemoglobin alleles, you're just fine, unless you live in a place where there's malaria, then you die of malaria. If you have one sickle cell anemia allele and one normal allele, then you're resistant to malaria. You have two sickle cell anemia alleles and you die of sickle cell anemia. And even though you die of sickle cell anemia if you have two of those, you end up still, just because of all the mixture, people are so much better off. It ends up being worth having that allele in the pot. The math works out as long as you have that. There's not... The data is a little bit more mixed on this, but there has certain things that you can check out mathematically in the population. The third thing is maternal effects, which is, in other words, basically the mom made you gay genetically sort of argument. So, and what?
Well, your mom made you everything. Like, you were cooked inside of her.
And this is like, this is totally, so there are very important genes. So the genes that determine how big you are, particularly as a baby. Like, you get one copy from dad and one copy from mom. There's, like, a little genetic race that goes on. It's because dad wants you to be, like, his babies. Because we're sort of geared to be having a little bit promiscuous sex, like, more than one dad and a given partner and blah, 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 blah. So, like, it's your genes. You want to have your baby grow the biggest and fastest and take the most energy away from the mother as possible. Mom, not so keen on this. She wants to survive and have babies and generally have other babies in the future and sort of make a more even distribution. So the mother will actually go in and the egg cell and shut off the genes for rapid growth, whereas the dad will shut off the genes for inhibiting rapid growth. And so you get this thing where it's called genetic imprinting, and it has to deal with what genes are turned on and off. And it's a sort of another deeper level, and this gets into the sort of epigenetic stuff that I started talking about earlier. And so this is sort of like the race. And so the idea is that maybe mom at some points, genetically realizes there's some advantage, again, having a caretaker. It sort of rolls in a little bit with kinship selection, but can be very broad things where the moms maybe start shutting off some of the genes for making heterosexual males, and so you end up with homosexual male at the end of it. Yay. Okay, so... All right, guys, and this is the fourth one and the last one, which is kind of the niftiest, which is, what if this allele is really good for women, like, really makes, like, a super heterosexual woman, but also makes gay men? And so an obvious example is, like, a copy of a gene, again, a version of a gene that makes you really dig dudes, right? And if you're a lady, this is going to make you, like, more likely to have babies and piles of babies and actually seek out, heterosexual partners and lots of sex and lots of babies and disco for everyone. But if you get this allele as a man, you're maybe if it's pro-dude enough, it'll actually reset you up to be sexually attracted to men. And so in that sense, from a genetic and evolutionary point of view, that's a sexually antagonistic selection, right? Good for women, not so good for men who are from the point of view of passing on genes. Okay, great. So we have all these choices. We're really not sure which one it is, but we have piles and piles and piles of data about what frequency gay men happen and all these familial relations. And so these researchers that recently published in PLOS One, a really nifty, nifty journal, ran them through a bunch of mathematical models, all the available data with the assumptions that are in here, and tried to figure out which combination or which pattern of these four choices best fits what we actually observe and out and about. And it ended up being the best deal was this sexually antagonistic selection, that this idea that there's a gene, some copy of a gene that, you know, again, they don't know exactly which one it is, but something like, you know, makes really like men. And women who get it tend to have more babies. Again, Fitz, remember, go back to original findings. Women who get it tend to have more babies. So the female relations of a gay man tend
right,
to have more
so,
babies.
And then more babies.
Overcomes the fact that the gay man is not having babies.
Oh, it's kind of like carbon offset for procreation for gay people of like, please, you will carry on. Like that we will inspire these women. What makes us gay will inspire women to have all the babies we will not be having.
Exactly. And genetically. And so this is kind of – and so it's kind of a nifty study. I mean, it's not been definitively proven, but it actually fits very well and makes some predictions that fit very well with what we sort of observe in reality. One of the other nifty things they found is that it seems to be a gene that's one of the – it's supposed to – it's probably two genes, at least one of which is on the X chromosome. And this is the weird – remember I was saying earlier we get two copies of every gene. It's not entirely true. So men, because we have an X chromosome and a Y chromosome, we only get one copy of the genes on the X chromosome, most of them. And so that makes it, again, where you get a less of a dilution. And if you – as men, we must get our X chromosome from our mother because we have to get our Y chromosome from our dad. It's the only Y chromosome available. And so that's, again, fits the other finding that really only – it only seems genetic through female lines. That your dad being gay, your dad comes out, it's fine. You know, you have no real greater genetic chance of being gay yourself because you don't get the X chromosome from your dad. It just doesn't work that way. And so it's kind of nifty. I don't know. What do you think about this? What do you think about this whole argument about – intrinsic versus extrinsic and genetic versus non-genetic traits?
It's all just like, okay, because, I mean, the basic fact I'm going on is like, oh, I just knew when I was, you know, 3 or 4 and, like, about being gay. And it was a natural fact. And so how it all played out is all just, like, kind of a curious puzzle to me. So from what you're saying, this is like a battle that happens while the baby is being developed.
It pretty much. I mean, so this is where we get in. And I said I wasn't going to talk about it, but gay men. It's the data sort of coalescing around the idea that it's probably a little bit more of a genetic trait that development and environment and you know sort of in the womb and sort of things like that play a role. But genetics seems to be pretty big. And this sort of thing like height. Height's another trait. It's a complex trait where genes definitely play a thing. Like you have two tall parents, you're most likely to be tall. You have two short parents, you're most likely to be short. But if you have two tall parents and you don't get fed well as a kid, you're not going to be tall. This is how it goes. Whereas for women, sexual identification seems to be less genetic and maybe more sort of environmental cues in the womb, and hormonal exposure and things like that. And so it's not to say it's any less intrinsic. It's just a little bit different. I don't really know. I mean, I kind of – in some levels it's interesting, but I kind of don't care. I mean, even if being gay was a choice, I would kind of be like, well, you know, we let Unitarians exist.
Would be another – the and, of course, often this discussion is often met with this wave of – but if it is genetic, can we be genetically modified out of the species?
We're really bad. I mean, that's been – people have been talking about genetically modifying things in people for – I mean, this is some of the research – scientific research I've actually done, and it's like been the pie in the sky thing for a long, long time. We can't even correct like actual genetic causes, you know, like sickle cell anemia or thalassemia or, you know, glycogen store, like all these like horrible genetic diseases where like you're, you know, glycogen store diseases where you die of a heart attack when you're like 8, you know, and like things like that. Like we can't cure that. I think we're quite a bit away. And those are simple, like one gene that's messed up, genetic problems. So even if you think about being gay as a problem, because it's at least two genes and they're all over the place and it's this complex thing that happens in development, it's going to be a little bit tricky. You know, you get into a little bit about, you know, sexual attraction is modified by a lot of things at the moment, whether, you know, drugs and sort of your emotional state and your
cologne.
And so there might be, you might be able to enhance or decrease plasticity, and you certainly can chemically castrate people and things like that, where you can kind of
certainly
it's just delightful. It's an obvious choice for anyone. And so like it going as far as like going in there and like tinkering around the genes, I God bless all the Christian scientists out there who want to try this. Maybe they'll end up curing something of use on the way to doing it, because this is a tough problem.
And then the other – if they could identify a gay baby in utero, the people who would have a problem with it being gay are the exact people who would never abort that baby. So we're safe.
Yeah. Well, this would be the idea. You can do pre-implantation genetic testing or that sort of thing in selective abortion, but – who knows? Maybe I don't really know. I mean, that's sort of the, again, I kind of wish there's a parallel universe where there's like the Christian Scientist podcast where they're discussing right now the relative ethics of aborting a gay fetus, but that isn't really our topic.
Those are some Christian Scientists I would tune in for.
That would be a really fascinating fight. I would really imagine that might be one of those ones, the nuance is sort of what we're going for. So I don't know. You're three and four when you...
Yeah, it was just... And it was just like the first people you noticed of like being just kind of even visually appealing. We're just like, oh, I like looking at that shape over this shape. And it was like looking at Darren instead of Samantha on Bewitched.
I mean, this is kind of the fun... this is one of the really pleasurable things as the culture has sort of become more sane in regards to gay people, is actually to kind of hear that. I mean, because the human being, there's something pleasant about having some diversity in like human, like actual different ways of seeing the world, like completely.
And the double allele thing, I've always been baffled by the gay guys who are like, oh, and then one day in college, all of a sudden I turned around in the locker room and I saw a naked man and I all of a sudden realized I was gay. I was like, okay, first of all, you escaped all the horror of a gay childhood. So I thought it was just like a lazy kind of keeping their head in the sand, but there it might be one of those double, like they have one allele, one gay allele and not the other, and it eventually flourishes in a way. Like it kind of gives me more empathy for the late bloomers and actual bisexuals.
Yeah. So this is one of the fascinating things, because again, if you have two genes, and again, this model, this study, they really couldn't tell. One gene definitely has to be in the X chromosome, but the second gene could be on an autosomal chromosome or the X chromosome again. And if it's on the autosomal, then again, you actually have three alleles that all. So you can actually have, and this kind of gets really lovely because it gets into sort of the Kinsey stuff, which hasn't. Some of it hasn't held up. The idea that there really is somewhat of a spectrum, and so if you have three plus and minus, you can navigate three alleles where it can be gay or not gay, you actually do end up sort of getting into, you know, 2^3 is right about the level you'd expect to see sort of the Kinsey 1-6 spread of sexual attraction. And so it's kind of, like I said, some of the things they found out of this were kind of fit some of the earlier findings in a way that, you know, they came with some assumptions, and then their model predicted things that they didn't initially think about. And it was kind of cool. I don't know. It was sort of a fun study. I thank you guys for listening. You can catch me on my blog, dearscience.org, or at the Stranger's blog, slogthestranger.com. My column is every other week. If you see Mistress Matisse in the Stranger, I am not on that week, but beyond that, I am.
He's tied up somewhere.
The music, again, for our theme music, thank you again to Big Little Dipper Dipper, and thank you for listening.
Bye.